This is the morning brief from the Economic Times.
On Wednesday, Byju's, India's edtech market leader, announced the acquisition of GradeUp. This will be Byju's fifth acquisition in the last 6 months, eighth since January of this year, and 17 since its inception.
As EdTech major Byju's has announced the acquisition of US-based kids' digital reading platform Epic. Now, this is a $500 million deal.
Now, EdTech player Byju's has acquired Singapore-headquartered Great Learning, which is a global player in the professional and the higher education segment.
Byju's has made an all-cash offer of $300 million to acquire White Hat Junior.
It is easily the largest deal in the Indian education tech space. Byju's is acquiring offline coaching center business Akash Educational Services for close to $1 billion.
We've been growing at 100% year on year, and we are actually getting accelerated on a much larger base. This year we'll grow at a significantly higher percentage than 100% in our core, in our organic model, and the inorganic route is going to accelerate that growth.
That's the man himself, Byju Ravindran, a former engineer by training turned maths teacher turned education czar. Over the years, the check sizes that he's been writing to buy competition have only gotten bigger, their scope wider, and ambitions higher.
But what happens when that personal story is about learning itself? And what happens when the person at the heart of the story does more than just tell it? What if they build a company that enables you to go on the very same journey, sharing the gifts of their experience to help you along the way? Byju's is on a mission to make millions fall in love with learning.
Not far back, Byju's offline tutorial classes graduated to full house indoor stadiums, then to online, then to tablets. Today, he lords over a transcontinental empire that's $17 billion and counting, valuing his teenage company much more than several storied Indian corporate names, like India's largest thermal power company, NTPC, or Tata Motors, or Mahindra & Mahindra, or even household consumer brands like Dabur or Britannia. Coming up in the episode, inside the M&A factory at Byju's, the reason behind the shopping spree, and how that is changing Byju's as an organization. From the Economic Times, I'm Arijit Barman. It's Friday, 10th September. This is the Morning Brief. It's been a phenomenal ride in less than two decades. But is this sustainable? If Byju's growing at such rapid clip, then why is it loss-making as per the last published numbers of 2019-20? The losses have actually swelled nearly 30 times to 262 crores, even though revenues have jumped 82%. What will turn things around? In this podcast, we will try to get all these answers from my colleague, an EdTech banker, and a senior internet analyst.
It started off in 2011-12, largely offline, largely higher education test prep. That was their focus. And in fact, you know, Byju's himself was known to be a teacher who pulled crowds. And, you know, that's how students learned, and his, you know, kind of his word of mouth grew. 2012 to 2015, this is the period where they moved online, they moved to tablet-based learning, and they increased their scope to include GMAT, engineering, civil services, these kind of examinations. So still largely exam-based, but it expanded their scope, right? It was 2015-16 when they actually entered K-12, and simultaneously they also launched their mobile app. So it became a mobile friendly product as well. You know, year after that is when they went even lower in the K-12 market. They started looking at K-4 onwards, younger kids as well. And they also started making their presence in markets beyond India. Of course, it's been a different situation since 2018-19. As we know, many things have happened the last few years. So one has been their humongous funding levels. Second has been the pandemic itself. And during this time, what we have seen the growth and the shift in the company has been almost creating now three verticals. One is K-12. Second pillar is the test prep, where they had some of the online kind of solutions. And now, given the Akash acquisition, which is their biggest acquisition so far, they are looking at a hybrid model in terms of both offline plus online. And the third segment, which they had no presence earlier, but now with the Great Learning acquisition, they do have now a footprint in that market, which is a very interesting market because continued learning itself has been growing a lot post the pandemic.
That's Debalina Majumdar, my colleague from ET Prime, who tracks the EdTech space closely, including Baiju's meteoric growth. So by adding one layer after another, as Debalina just explained, Baiju's has become an educational conglomerate, or much like a marketplace that offers various solutions across the life cycle of a student.
So in business, we have this concept called customer lifetime value, right? So I feel like they're trying to mirror that exactly. You can look at it from age, like somebody from maybe grade 2 onwards or grade 3 onwards to someone who's 25 or 30. You know, they're trying to offer solutions across these age groups. The other way to look at it is customer's share of wallet, right? So when I look at education, where would I need to spend? And, you know, trying to maximize that share of wallet across different entry points in education and in career.
There is a very well-defined strategy around what Baiju's is doing right now. If you think about it, most technology companies and even edtech companies are driven by essentially a very critical ratio, which they call the LTV to CAC ratio. And the LTV stands for lifetime value, which is essentially the value that you can get out of a customer for the lifetime that he stays with the company. And CAC stands for customer acquisition cost, right? So essentially, it kind of gives you a sense of how much value that I'm making out of a customer versus how much I'm spending to acquire that customer, right? Our belief is the Baiju's acquisition strategy works to maximize this LTV and CAC ratio. And that's value accretive for Baiju's.
And that's Rakesh Gupta, Hyderabad-based managing partner of Loestro Advisors, a boutique investment bank specializing in education sector deals.
What is really happening to kind of drive that LTV by CAC ratio? And you rightly mentioned that there is a play which is both a horizontal expansion and a vertical expansion.
So to put all that in context, if Baiju's initial online foray was with an app that largely catered to the after-school needs of the pre-K-12 student, that is up to the age of 17, it went on to spend almost $1 billion to buy Akash to get a foothold in the test prep and offline tutorial segments that has mushroomed all over the country. Another $600 million to cherry-pick Great Learning to get a toehold in upskilling for young professionals and also in the higher education space. Another $500 million went for Epic for digital reading, and another $300 million for White Hat Junior for international expansions in markets like US and Brazil to teach maths and coding at scale. So to the same student, Baiju's is offering more solutions at various points of his learning life and thereby getting more value out from him. And a company that has spent over $2 billion on M&As after raising $1.3 billion from various investors in just last 18 months and is supposed to be on the road again to raise another $1.5 billion, the shopping has another dimension, arbitrage. That is buying cheap and realizing a higher value.
there is an arbitrage which is playing out in all these acquisitions which are there. If you look at it today, the latest I heard about Byju's revenue was around 2800 crores, which was in FY20. And from some of the media articles and what Mr. Byju himself had talked about, that they're doubling their revenue this year, which is around 5600 crores, right? Close to around 0.8 billion. The last I heard in terms of their valuation, they raised money at around $20 billion, which is, if you think about it, almost 25 times multiple of their revenue. That's a steep value that they're getting. However, if you start looking at the acquisitions that they are doing, most of them are in a single digital multiple of revenue. If you look at Akash, for example, I think they acquired, if I'm not mistaken, what I've seen in the market is around $1 billion for a company which was doing a revenue of around 1200 crores, so which is like 6 times multiple. Now, if I'm Byju's, right, and if I can get 25 times multiple for revenue that I have versus 6 times that I have to pay for something that I acquire, obviously there's a huge arbitrage that I'm making out of it, right? And a lot of it is driven by the fact that there is so much capital which is kind of going behind Byju.
But for now, at least, purely going by the numbers that are available, it's a very different story. Byju's makes a lion's share of its total income, in fact, a whopping 70%, selling hardware, that is, tablets and SD cards to children in the K-12 segment, that is, from kindergarten to grade 12. Then comes tuition fees and sale of reference books. Now, the growth runway, purely by selling educational hardware, is limiting beyond a point. So, buying a whole host of companies across the spectrum not only gives the company access to new markets and segments, but also to newer revenue streams.
From a business point of view, we use a term called Ansoff matrix. It's nothing but a 2x2 matrix, where on one side you have product, other side you have market. So that could give rise to 4 quadrants. Same product, same market. New product, same market. Same product, new market. And new product, new market. I think they are literally covering the entire matrix. So they could have stayed, right? One pathway for Byju's could have been stay deep in K-12 and cover all possible options within K-12. And I think there was a point in time where they acquired White Hat and they acquired Osmo and they acquired LabInApp, which is a science lab. People would have thought that that's the focus they are taking, and they are taking it globally. But then if you see, they have gone to the other markets part of the Ansoff matrix, and they have gone to the other products, which is the 2 other verticals which they've created right now. That does add revenue. So inorganic revenue gets added. At the same time, it gives them 2-3 different cross-sell opportunities. It could be cross-sell across the time cycle of a student. It could be also cross-sell in a similar geography, different products in the same geography.
That also means growth and more growth. And that's what's getting the market so excited. It sees a tiger on a treadmill. All eyes on capturing a larger share of the market and the customer's wallet. Losses be damned, at least for now.
So on 20 to 23% margin is what we are expecting this year. That's after investing in new businesses. The India core model growth will slow down to 70 to 75% next year. But with these acquisitions contributing, we will continue growing at least 100% for next 2 to 3 years, because the Byju's Future School in international markets is very promising. There we are growing month on month. There, like currently, even at 1% penetration in the US market, that segment can do $1 billion revenue. So the opportunity is huge.
Early in the life cycle of most of these businesses, you will see businesses which grow 100% plus year on year. And a lot of that growth is driven by investments on the marketing advertising side. I think what one has to kind of look at when we look at these businesses, unit economics. Is the business stable from a unit economics perspective? And that means, you know, is the ARPU high enough? Is gross margin high enough? I think Byju's ability to grow 100% plus at fairly high gross margins at 65-70% means that the unit economics are stable. Average revenue per user is fairly high, around, you know, $170 to $200. Which is fairly healthy. And the idea now is to drive on growth. And growth obviously will come with a lot of investments, largely on marketing, advertising spend, because India is still an underpenetrated market. You have to create a market as well, spend your ad dollars to acquire more customers, and then scale up those customers as transacting customers.
And that's where the strategy of Byju's would be to reach, you know, 30-40% market share in India at tech. And I think post that, they can manage their advertising spend, bring it down, and show you profitability as what traditional investors look at.
That's Rahul Malhotra, an analyst with Bernstein Research, who tracks internet companies including Byju's. He finds Byju's M&A and growth strategy unique, since it partially follows successful global models, but also customizes them to suit local conditions.
I think in a way it's unique because of the ambition of being the market leader, not only in your local market like India, expanding that breadth of offerings from just not K-12, but you know, junior classes, and also expanding that into test prep market as well as professional learning. And also have an international ambition where you plan to be, you know, 30% revenues over the longer term coming out of international geographies. I think that demands a very aggressive M&A strategy. We have not seen similar aggression on M&A in some of the other edtech platforms because a lot of those are regional or focus on certain areas, right?
Interestingly enough, Rahul also sees a subtle shift in the rationale that is tempting Byju's to open its purse strings for bigger, bolder bets.
I think the acquisition strategy has to be looked at in phases. And I would think that the early acquisitions, I think, you know, 2015 or onwards till, you know, 2019, were largely to strengthen the existing product portfolio. And the idea was, improve your educational content or bring in some career guidances in your platform or, you know, homework assistance. All of that was largely tuck-in acquisitions. And now is the recent acquisition starting 2019 was largely to focus on creating another growth leg, and which is an M&A-led growth leg, and also entry into new segments, which is critical for the business to continue growing at these levels.
As per Rahul's maths, the extent of value accretion from the newer, larger buys will soon start reflecting on the balance sheet.
And our estimates should drive 30-35% of revenue for Byju's. And the core revenues are at close to 800-900 million run rate. So this acquisition should be incremental to that. And to an extent of close to 30% plus is what the... what we're hearing and what the estimates look like based on the revenues of some of these acquisitions they have done. So I think it's a strategy to scale up fast, and you can't build a business growing that strongly at 100% just from an organic strategy. And I think considering it's a fragmented market, there's a lot of players in edtech. It's also a good strategy if you can raise significant funds and look at interesting assets that allows you to scale up strongly.
What is certainly adding tailwinds to this is also the COVID pandemic that has seen large-scale migration from classroom teaching to online.
आजकल बिना बोले पढ़ने लगा है. No idea why.
आजकल पढ़ने को बोलते ही नहीं है. No idea why.
So, LHS is greater than RHS.
No, LHS is equal to RHS. Samjha bro.
Concept samjhane laga hai.
Mummy kab itni cool ban gayi yaar?
Samajh ke padhte hain to inka dil lag jata hai aur parent se partner tak ka faasla tay ho jata hai. Byju's, download now.
Total user base growing 2x. In a matter of months, right, from April to September, they have scaled up significantly for Byju's from, you know, 45 million to 90 million. The customer engagement being very high. And also, I think the model scales up as you get that inflection point of high user usage, as well as stickiness, right? If somebody's spending 70 minutes on the platform, your stickiness significantly improves. And that helps in renewal rates because then you're used to the platform. You continue using that. You're coming back to spend more than an hour every day on the platform. So I think the COVID impact and the lockdown has definitely been helped EdTech, or EdTech definitely has been the biggest beneficiary from that perspective. Considering schools are closed, there's no real offline learning. Most people have transitioned to the digital world. And I think that's driven the ease of customer acquisition to some level. And renewal rates are very strong. I think an 85% customer renewal rate shows the fact that they've been able to bring in stickiness. And a lot of that has to do with the inflection point coming probably in April, March, April last year.
Over the next 3 to 4 years, we are looking at anywhere between $5 to $6 billion in revenue. At that kind of scale, because we retain our users very well. Our retention in our core products is in the, it's at 80% plus rate. And so with every passing year, it becomes more and more profitable. So overall, a blended profitability of like 30% plus is easily possible. So if at 5 billion revenue, 1.5 billion profit is a very conservative estimate.
Rivals will, however, respond by saying Byju's projecting such high top line thanks to its creative accounting methods. It is recording income that will be accrued over several years in just 1 year, whereas a bulk of its sales are 3 to 5 year plans, some even going up to 7 years.
That's the criticism which is quite often talked about in this space, right? I think there are two ways to look at it. One, obviously, I'm sure they have a fairly good set of investors on the cap table and who will be very, very particular about corporate governance matters for Byju's themselves and would ensure that anything which is being reported out is kosher and not out of the world. So I would rely on that. But I definitely feel that there are a few things which need to be taken into consideration here. There is definitely this thing of a multi-year package being sold to parents, and a lot of them time it is being financed by, let's say, a NBFC, and the entire amount of money which is coming to the Byju's is eventually recorded immediately into their balance sheet that particular year itself. Somebody can come and argue that the parent might want to kind of unsubscribe after a year and hence it's really not a revenue, right? That argument can be made, but I think there's a fine line out there.
But what is arguably more disconcerting for some is much of Byju's story that is getting everyone excited today is actually about what lies ahead for the company. Much of this hype is predicated on its performance going forward. In the startup space, we have seen spectacular rises, but equally spectacular crashes as well, and totally unforeseen events, like the EdTech clampdown in China that recently lopped off $1 trillion of collective market capitalization within just 72 hours.
Chinese media reporting a crackdown on education technology by the Chinese government. They would ban foreign capital from buying stakes in Chinese tutoring institutions and ban such institutions from public listing.
Any kind of curriculum which is being followed in Chinese schools as mandatory will have to be given for non-profit. So essentially, this very booming sector in China is going to become non-profit if these rules go through.
Clearly, China has taken a very aggressive view of after-school learning and have clamped down a fairly large amount of businesses because of that. Our internal hypothesis, right, at some point of time, the Indian government will definitely start playing active role in regulating some of these businesses. And we have seen this play out in every other sector, to be honest with you. If you look at it, at some point of time, microfinance was the darling of the market. And you saw what kind of frenzy there was. And suddenly you saw regulations kind of clamping down in India as well. You saw a fairly decent amount of stuff happening on e-commerce as well, right? So there is always a lag in the regulation. And I'm 100% sure that over the few quarters, you will see regulations playing out and Byju's will have to deal with the regulation, right? So that is one. Second, I think, like we said, that there has been a frenzy of acquisitions which have happened. And each of these acquisitions come with own set of baggages, come with own set of people, comes with own set of product and culture. The core to Byju's delivering this acquisition value essentially will rely on how well they are able to integrate each of these acquisitions into a wholesome company, which basically makes that 1 + 1 = 2 equation.
Even Byju's knows this, as even for him, it has not always gone as per script. For example, The Fairy Tale Alliance with Disney struck 4 years ago to get early learners hooked was supposed to be Baiju's Big Bang International breakout, but it didn't deliver. For Disney too, it was their maiden foray into education. But differences over IP strategy has resulted in a shoddy product and heartburns.
We are our kids' first teachers. And when we make early learning fun, we make them better learners for life. Introducing Disney Baiju's Early Learn app for classes 1 to 3, for classes 4 to 12.
Disney has iconic characters. These are characters kids love, right? The reasoning behind the partnership was that given these characters are loved by children, if these characters start teaching you numbers or start teaching you words, you would kind of do that also happily. That is an assumption which both I am making and which the company could have made at that point of time. But I think what they would have also learned over time is learning and entertainment are two very different things. What we like during entertainment is not the same thing as what we like during learning. And again, I think behavioral science teaches us a lot of these things, that we have a particular pattern when we learn, right? We like to underline, we like to set our goals, we might take notes. So it's very different behavior we exhibit while we are learning. So a Disney cartoon alone cannot save the day. I think that probably was the starting of the international ambition. So post which, you know, maybe they kind of deepened that. And that's why if you see they acquired Osmo, which is a mixed reality kind of company in the early K-12 space. Then they acquired, later they acquired Epic. And they have kind of not let that go, right? So the international acquisition strategy and, you know, almost like using character-driven videos for early childhood, they have not stopped that. But this particular partnership may not have given them exactly what they were looking for.
The key, therefore, will be to get all the levers of the Baiju flywheel to work in a synchronized fashion, integrate the companies and their founders and senior leadership.
A lot of the early stage team of Baiju's were actually students, and they have stayed with the company for a long time. So that has given them some stability. At the same time, you know, the minute you have such big ambitions, you also need to have people who have experience in different geographies, in specific expertise areas. So I do see last couple of years, they have been investing a lot in people, right? So for example, every company they acquire, so what I heard from Great Learning is that the Great Learning CEO, Mohan Lakkamraju, he is being given the charter to really paint the foray into the skilling space. So a lot of it depends on how he takes it forward and how integrated he feels with the overall ecosystem and the vision. Similarly, in the future school space, they have to build a strong leadership, second line, third line in that space. Similarly, Akash and the test prep space, right? So I think like any company which has got massive growth levels, it's like a machine that constantly needs oiling.
But not everyone is convinced just yet. White Hat Junior's founder Tarun Bajaj quit right after his lock-in period expired recently. Some feel even organizations like Great Learning and Akash might also see churn, and they will take center stage a lot more as Baiju's get primed for a mega listing.
An IPO in the next 15 to 18 months is how we are looking at it.
The listing will certainly bring more accountability. Accountability is also important when a simple Google search will point to the rising angst of parents and students feeling trapped after being missold a dream. OPEC refund or cancellation policies of many of these edtech giants, including Baiju's, their aggressive and skewed sales pitch, feasting on parental insecurities, are leading to loan burdens that sometimes can touch lakhs of rupees. But the customer mostly have minimum to zero recourse. Once on the treadmill, learning at one's own pace through bespoke solution remains a misnomer. But unlike the tuition classes that prevailed when we were mugging for our exams, devoid of any long-term payment commitments, logging out of a multi-year package now has increasingly become a nightmare, with third-party loan providers locking in families. Bigger in edtech is not necessarily better. Worse, try voicing dissent on social media. Chances are you will be slapped with lawsuits or outright takedowns. Just like China, the fault lines in India are too stark to simply brush away, and the divide created by online education resources available only to a select few students based on their economic profile is further amplifying an already uneven playing field, widening societal inequalities. Copy-pasting Xi Jinping's nanny state template is extreme, but a sophisticated, more nuanced, light-touch intervention is certainly essential. I'm Arijit Barman, and you've been listening to The Morning Brief. This episode was edited and coordinated by Nehal Chaliawala and Bhavya Dilip Kumar. I hope you enjoyed listening to this episode. We look forward to your feedback. Write to us at themorningbrief@timesgroup.com. And if you like this episode, please share on your social media handle. We really appreciate it. The Morning Brief drops every Tuesday, Thursdays, and Fridays. Thank you for listening in and have a great weekend. Goodbye and good luck. All edited sound clips used in this episode belongs to their respective owners. Credits mentioned in the description.